Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Southern California, was a two-time All-American at USC, and signed with the Cincinnati Bengals in 1980. He played for them for 13 seasons and played in two Super Bowls. He was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1998 and is arguably the greatest offensive tackle of all time. In 2002, he created a foundation to encourage young people mentally, physically, and spiritually. His name, Anthony Munoz. And I'm Jack Prisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Prisula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with a gentle giant, Anthony Munoz, arguably the greatest offensive tackle of all time. Anthony, welcome, an honor to have you.
Jack, thank you for having me. Looking forward to this time together.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
I can. I grew up in Ontario, California, which is about 40 miles due east of Los Angeles. One of five siblings. I have two older brothers, two younger sisters. Actually raised in a single-parent home. My mom raised five kids by herself. Never knew my dad, never met my dad. Even now at the age of 50, we'll never meet him. He has passed away. Knew several things about him, but he was never around. So my mom raised five by herself, and it was tough, but she worked two and three jobs to provide for us. And, of course, being one of three boys, one of five kids, we knew who the boss was. So she pretty much set the rules at home, and we obeyed for the most part, I guess. But it was one of those things where, even though we had just one parent, my mom is one of nine, so we had a few uncles, few aunts, and a lot of cousins around that really helped, supported, encouraged, and the family was pretty close.
What was the biggest things your mom taught you, Anthony?
Well, I guess the main thing is just really without verbalizing was work ethic. I mean, for a lady who worked two and three jobs and did pretty much what she had to do to provide for us, and it was always provided. Work ethic was taught right there, right in front of us at the home. And, of course, with that being said, because she did work long hours during the school year and especially during the summer, she taught us responsibility. I mean, we had to, at a young age, we learned how to look out for each other. We learned how to cook. We learned how to clean house. We learned how to mend our clothes, take care of our clothes. So, we learned quite a bit as youngsters growing up, and I guess independence and responsibility, work ethic are the main things she taught us.
We're facing unprecedented times right now. A lot of single moms out there, a lot of couples who have really got tough financial times. What would you say to them, Anthony Munoz?
Well, I think, from what I learned from my mom is do whatever you can. And I know the job situations are tough. But, she did a lot of labor work. And I guess at times when jobs are tough, really seek those types of jobs. Seek encouragement and support from family members. And I know, as a single parent, single mom, you don't have the immediate support with the husband or a father. But, hopefully there's aunts, uncles, cousins, and really in groups that, are providing different services. And I guess that's the one thing I'm learning over the years is there's a lot of resources out there. All you have to do is pretty much apply yourself and go out and look for those different organizations. And again, even with the tough financial times, these groups are out there and really shaking the trees to get financial help for families like this. But it's a matter of rallying around, circling the wagons and really including the entire family to support and to help you out.
Talk to us, if you will, about the value of athletics for young people.
Well, I think it's great. I think not only does it occupy the time, it gets you out, and it's physically good for you. There's especially now in the days of computers and video games and so many things you can just do just sitting there in front of a TV set or a screen. The health is so important for young people, and and not only the physical health, but I think the mental health, the confidence, the psychological self-esteem that you can build as an individual when you get out and you get involved in organized athletics, organized activities. And, you know, I look at my childhood, and I started playing baseball at 6 years old, and I was out there in the summer every single day, and during the school year, you know, the recesses, you go out and you get some physical activity. So I think to look at the total person, athletics is very important because it is a physical and it's mentally, and I think it's also socially, you know, it teaches you how to interact with people, interact in a situation where you're winning and also when you're losing, so adversity and success. So there's a lot of things that you can learn as a person when you get involved in athletics.
Some kids only want sports. Talk to us about the value of an education today.
Well, you know, and I still, even as an old guy, I still get a chance to go out and read at libraries, go to elementary schools, and really share with the students the value of education. It doesn't matter what you do. Education is always going to be helpful, and you can always keep that with you. That's one thing that cannot ever be taken away, and it doesn't matter how old you get. You can always do it. Read books, learn. You know, as an athlete, you only have so many years. And for myself, I played 13 years, which is a long career in the NFL. Still a lot of life to live after that, and even the things I'm doing now, the value of education, the value of knowing how to read, the value of really disciplining yourself is come in handy. So when I get a chance, you know, and you go talk to young kids in junior high and high school, and they have that dream to be a professional football player, a pro athlete. I mean, there's nothing wrong with dreaming big, but make sure the one thing we told our kids, and both of them did a tremendous job, is that you have to be a balanced person, education, athletics, if that's what you're going to choose, and just be a total person. You know, you don't want to be so strong in one area that you neglect the others and it's going to harm you as a person. So, you know, I share with people the size of a playbook when I got to the Bengals, and, you know, if you didn't know how to read and study and comprehend and you know, maintain or retain what you were reading, you know, and that comes from the things, the habits you learned in school. And so that's very important, regardless of what you're doing, to really study, to make education important in your life.
We're talking to Anthony Munoz, who was a two-time All-American at USC. And I'm Jack Grisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Crisula.
Welcome back. We're with Anthony Munoz, who in 1991 was the NFL Man of the Year, named after Walter Payton. But prior to that, you spent your college years at USC. Talk to us about USC and the college years.
Well, you know, USC was a childhood dream. I mean, it was something that growing up that close to the campus, you know, watching guys like O.J. Simpson and Anthony Davis and, of course, being familiar with their baseball program, Freddie Lynn, Dave Kingman. I mean, that was a dream of mine to go there. And when that opportunity came, you know, I knew that there would be a lot that I could experience there. You know, of course, going there on a scholarship, getting an opportunity to go to a great institution, go to class there, and then go, you know, play football there. Of course, a lot of things I wanted to do on the football field, but you know, some adversity hit, and you know, in the 4 years there, played in one UCLA game, one Notre Dame game, one out of three Rose Bowls, and of course that was, you know, you wanted to go there because you're going to play against those teams, you're going to get a chance to play in a Rose Bowl, play for national championships, hopefully as an offensive lineman, block for a Heisman Trophy winner. And it was one of those things growing up from the age of six through high school playing three sports, football, basketball, and baseball. I never really experienced injury. But all of a sudden, 3 of the 4 years at USC, I had 3 knee operations in 4 years. Of course, even though I went through that adversity, I would not trade that experience in for anything. You know, being a Trojan, having the opportunity to go there is something that I'll always share and cherish. And learned a lot about myself. I learned how quickly the game can be taken from you because of injury. You know, so my future beyond USC was uncertain. But I wanted to rehab, and I did get to play in the final Rose Bowl my senior year. I got hurt in the very first game, so we went in the Rose Bowl against Ohio State, and I was bound and determined to play in that game. So I rehabilitated, played in that game, had a chance to redshirt, but it was time to move on. Just, you know, something in my heart says it's time to move on. So I played in that one Rose Bowl out of three, But like I said, even though I only played about half the games in 4 years at USC, it is a very, very special place. And I, you know, since both of my kids have finished college and now they're starting their families, I've had a chance to reconnect the last 3-4 years, go back to 2-3 games a year, reconnect with my college buddies. And that's been phenomenal because, you know, while I was playing, it was hard. And I went into broadcasting for 7 years, then watching my son and daughter play. So it's been a lot of years, but it's almost like time just kind of stood still because, you know, I reconnected with my teammates, and we have a blast going to different games. But, again, I'm proud to say I'm a Trojan, and that's just what that experience did for me there, even though, I missed quite a bit on the field. I gained a lot more off the field.
You then get drafted the 3rd overall pick in the 80 draft with the Bengals. You play for 13 seasons. Talk to us about the pro career.
Well, again, I just kind of gave you a thumbnail sketch of, the college career. So really there was uncertainty about what was going to happen in the NFL. Going into my senior year, I was ranked extremely high. But then after my third knee operation, wasn't really sure. And, the top five teams that year, starting with the Lions, were pretty well set on taking Billy Sims. The Jets, I found out had failed me on my physical. Then it was the Bengals, the Packers, and the Giants. So those teams kind of flew me back in after the combines. And the Bengals were the only team that sent a representative out to L.A. to work me out. Forrest Gregg was just the newly appointed head coach, and I knew exactly who this guy was. I mean, Hall of Fame tackle, Vince Lombardi, Packer, great, player for him. And he worked me out for about an hour and a half, 2 hours, and then which was a big risk. They picked me 3rd pick in the entire draft, and a lot of people were kind of scratching their head. What was this pick all about? Is this guy going to last a year? Is he going to make it through? And I was thankful that I was able to play 13 years and really didn't miss a game until my 11th year. And after, not playing but one full season in college. So I'm very thankful. I was blessed, fortunate to play a lot of games in the NFL and just have a great time and great experience, great memories with a lot of great relationships with those Bengal teams of the 80s and early 90s.
What were the one or two highlights of those 13 years?
Well, of course, there's no question about it. When you work all offseason, work all season, you get a chance to go to the playoffs. And not only go to the playoffs, but to host the playoffs at your home park. Both years, 81 and 88, we won home field advantage, so we got to play the two playoff games, especially playing the AFC Championship game at home both times. That was a highlight. And then, of course, going to the Super Bowl both times was a highlight. So, in my 13 years, it had to be not only the playoffs but the AFC Championship games at home, the two Super Bowls. And, of course, there's no question that, making my first Pro Bowl, in my second year with the team was a highlight. And then also making my last, in my 12th year in the league was – so I'd probably, add those as the highlights of my career actually as a player.
A month ago, the Basketball Hall of Fame named their new class, David Robinson, Michael Jordan, Stockton, a few others. And Mitch Albom, our own Mitch Albom, wrote an article entitled, "The Fight Begins as the Spotlight Dims." And he starts by quoting Michael Jordan, quote, "This is not fun for me." He had just been selected to the pantheon of his sport. And Mitch Albom says, "It's something that many pro athletes endure, the agonizing changeover from God to mortal man." Talk to us, Anthony Munoz, about when you have to leave the sport that you've loved your whole life.
Well, I agree, when you leave the game. I mean, for me, it was probably the first 2-3 years. You're doing something that you were trained just about your entire life to do, and it's a love that you have. The spotlight, the adulation, all those things play an important role. But I think there's a bit of there's a bit of doubt, there's a bit of uncertainty. Okay, what do I do next? Here, I've spent my whole life being trained to be an athlete. Now I got to go out and do something else. So that, I think for me, that was the frightening thing at first. But after about 2-3 years. I tell you what, Jack, I started to love it, spending time with my wife and my kids. I had a chance to, do something I loved, went into broadcasting. Even though it was a full schedule, it was still a little tough at the beginning because, so soon after finishing playing. But then the further you get away from it, the more I enjoy it, because I do, with my kids, my wife now, grandkids. And there's so many other things that are occupying my time, and it takes my mind away from something that I love doing, and I still watch the game. But, it's one of those things where, first of all, you don't know how long you're going to play. And then, one year, 13 years, it's still very, very difficult after the fact, and you're searching for things to do. And you, like I said, there's an uncertainty of, okay, what do I have the ability to do? I mean, so you just start searching, and then you try to get into something that you have a passion for. And eventually, if you work hard enough, if you use the same work ethic that you used as an athlete, something's going to be there, and you're going to do something. And so that's the good thing about it.
August 1st, 1998, you're inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Can you share with us your memories of that day?
Humbling, appreciation, thankfulness, and just kind of like, and still 10, 11 years later, still like, wow. I'm in the Pro Football Hall of Fame with guys like Deacon Jones, Gale Sayers, Bart Starr, Butkus, I'm thinking that was a place for those guys. And here, this young man from Ontario, California is in there as a team member of these guys. And, it makes you appreciate all the people that are placed in your life to help you along the journey. And, I tell people when I started to put words on paper for my speech, it wasn't about, okay, I'm going to write about, hey, myself, here's what I did. It was, okay, this person helped me at this young age. This person helped me at this part of my career. It was, okay, let's thank and show appreciation for the people that have helped you along the journey. And that's what's so humbling, is that people give their time, energy, and resources for other people to accomplish dreams. And that's what happened in my life, from my mom to my brothers and sisters to the first Parks and Recreation gentleman I met, when I was 6 years old, Jim Seaman, who coached me in high school, who I still have a friendship with now 44 years later, to my college coaches, John Robinson and Hudson Hogg, to Jim McNally, Forrest Gregg, Sam Weiss. I mean, you just go on and on, and that's what being in the Hall of Fame means to me, is that, you think about mentors, you think about role models, you think about teammates, Max Montoya, Dave Lapham, Joe Walter, Bruce Kazurski, Boomer Esiason, guys like that. Because I have not met a person that accomplishes and gets to the pinnacle of a career that does it alone. I mean, there's always support. There's always people around you that help you. And that's what it's meant to me and means to me to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
We're talking Anthony Munoz, and I'm Jack Brissell, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Now, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Anthony Munoz, arguably the greatest offensive tackle of all time. Anthony, when you get into the Hall of Fame, you get to have somebody present you. And most times it's a college coach, a pro coach, an owner, a business associate. But you chose a 17-year-old young man, your son, Michael. Why?
Well, Jack, it was a tough decision. I mean, I had a list, and I've named some of the individuals earlier that I could have very easily chosen, from my college coach, Hudson Houck, line coach, head coach, John Robinson, or Jim McNally, who coached my entire career as an offensive lineman, or Forrest Gregg, or Sam Weiss. There's a list of very, very capable, very influential people that I could have chosen. But I guess when it boils down to it, I look at my family. I look at my wife, Dee Dee, who has been unbelievable. At that time, we'd been married 20 years, just celebrated 31 here. Michael and Michelle. And if I could have, I would have had both Michael and Michelle do it. They're 19 months apart. But I wanted someone that, knew me as a person. At the time, he'd been around me for 17 years, and pretty much longer than anybody else. And so I wanted to choose Michael. He had just turned 17, actually the day before the induction ceremony, July 31st. And I'm thankful I did. I did not know what he was going to say. He had a friend kind of help him lay out his speech, and Michael pretty much came up with the meat and potatoes of the speech. So it blew me away. Quite frankly, I could have very easily just deferred and not said a word after he spoke, because, after he did his thing at 17 years old, I'm thinking, here I am at 39 years old, can I even come close to the poise and and just the passion that he had with his speech. But I'm thankful I did. I learned a lot about being a father, a role model, someone that, you know, because your kids are always watching you, but you never know what they're learning, what they take in. And I guess it, that day I realized that the importance of fathering, the importance of doing the right thing, the importance of not only saying but doing what you say. And you know, I realized what Michael had learned from me, as many mistakes as I made as a father, and continue that you know, God has allowed me to be a father that's always there, and I'm thankful for that. But you know, again, you know, you talk about the Hall of Fame, and there's a lot of appreciation. I talked about colleagues, I talked about, you know, coaches, but Dede, as I mentioned, who, you know, we've just celebrated 31 years of marriage, and of course Michael, now as a soon-to-be 28-year-old husband and father, and of course Michelle, a wife and a soon-to-be mother here this summer. It's just phenomenal. That's really what life is all about.
There's a brotherhood amongst the Hall of Famers, a love amongst all of you. How do you explain that?
You know what, Jack? It's one of those things where you try to explain time after time, but it's just a special, special fraternity. I mean, not only, you know, with the Hall of Famers, but you've been through something that is unbelievably tough. There's rewards, there's adversity, and it doesn't matter if you competed with someone or against someone once you're retired or once you get to know each other. I mean, it's like you've been friends forever, you've been teammates forever, and it's one of those things where I love still, I mean, even every time I get a chance to be around these guys, it's like I learn so much every single time, and I appreciate being around them. And you know, it's like you get these guys that were trying to knock each other's head off during games and rough and tough and, you know, blood and dirt and this and sweat, and you see each other and there's big hugs given, and it's just one of those things where you just love being around each other.
As a Hall of Famer, you're a member of a team where you can never be cut, you can never be fired, you can never be traded.
That's right.
Are there one or two Hall of Famers that are just bigger than life for you?
Well, you know, I'd have to probably say one or two dozen, because it's like every year, Hall of Fame weekend, you know, I bring my camera, and to be able to take a picture between Merlin Olsen and Bob Lilly, even for an offensive lineman, taking a picture between two defensive linemen is pretty special. You know, back, you know, and we're losing guys, you know, every year. I mean, guys like Dante Lavelli, who we just lost, or Leo Nominelli, who, you know, just at one Hall of Fame weekend, you know, you could tell he was becoming fragile. And, to, you know, I had an open seat next to me as we waited back in the back to go out to the main floor the night the inductees get their jackets. And he, there was an open chair, and he goes, "Can I sit there?" And I said, "Can you?" And I pulled the chair out for him. And for 20 minutes, I got to hear the background of Leo Nominelli and how he didn't start football till after high school and, you know, in the service, and then went to college because there were some college coaches in the service with him, and all of a sudden he becomes a Hall of Famer through the 49ers. And, you know, so it's those type of guys that, you know, like I said, I don't know if there's just one or two, I mean, but there's because of their passion for the game, their love for the game, their passion for life, and for the, even you get guys that are in their 60s and 70s still know exactly what's going on, follow the game so closely, and that's what's impressive about these guys and why I love being around them.
Talk to us, Anthony Munoz, about your Hispanic descent.
Well, you know, something that I've always been proud of. My grandparents were from Mexico. My mom was first generation in California, born there. Again, it's something that I'm proud of. You know, I don't hesitate to tell people that I am Mexican-American. But it's one of those things that through high school, through college, the NFL, even now, I take the responsibility seriously, you know, as far as being a role model. You know, really cross lines. It doesn't matter nationality, but especially for the Hispanic young people to really. And I'm sure each culture is this way. You've got a proud culture. You've got a culture of a sense of history. And to allow these young Hispanic Latinos to believe in being able to accomplish a dream. And, you know, and hopefully they can see that, you know, that opportunity is there through what I've been able to do through college and in the NFL and afterwards. So it's something that I love the culture. Of course, I love the food a little too much at times, but you know, grew up on it and still enjoy it quite a bit. So I'm very proud of my Hispanic background.
If you will, talk to us about the browning of America.
Well, it's one of those things where I know here in Cincinnati, when I first got here in 1980, I'll never forget being a United Way representative. We had this great, they had a great idea. Let's go up to Kings Island, our nice amusement park here, and they had a little Hispanic section there, and I said, let's do a commercial around the Hispanic culture. And it was almost like we searched long and hard, and we could not find a whole lot of Hispanics, Latinos here in the greater Cincinnati area. This community over the years now, I believe, is up in the 50 to 60,000 range. We're getting some great culture, some diversity with the Hispanic food restaurants here. So, you know, it's exciting to see that the culture is adding to the diversity of this great country.
We're talking to Anthony Munoz, and I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Anything Is Possible with Jack Crisula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with a gentle giant, 6'6", 285 pounds, Anthony Munoz. You know, in today's high school game, you'd be too small to play on the offensive line.
Yeah, if I was to remain this stature. But, Jack, even today, if I would let myself eat what I want to eat, I think I could get right up there with those guys. So I have no plans on doing that. So I'll let those guys stay big, and I'll continue to try to get smaller.
You say that you don't shy away from being a role model. Other athletes say, I'm not a role model, and we need role models. Talk to us about being a good role model.
Well, Jack, you know, when I hear the word role model, of course, and I'll add to it, I'll preface by saying role models definitely are should start at home. My job as a role model should be first and foremost here at home with my wife and two kids, and then go out into the community. But I'm a firm believer that, we have platforms, doesn't matter what we do. And, I believe strongly in that. Just did a banquet last night, did a big fundraiser. I'm heading to a golf tournament today for Big Brothers, Big Sisters. So, you have business people, you have community people that, take that responsibility seriously of being a big brother to a young, little brother, a big sister, a little sister. I'm a firm believer to whom much is given, much is expected. And it's something that I've always taken seriously and I'll continue to take seriously that, we have a chance to be not only a role model, but leaders, influencers, and we, regardless to what we think about it, we're going to be a positive influence or we're going to be a negative influence. We just got to look at it either way. And that's why, I have a passion to be out in the community and try to use the platform to be a positive role model.
You and your wife, Didi, started the Anthony Munoz Foundation. Talk to us about that foundation.
Well, and that really stems from the passion I have for young people. Back in April of 2002, we started the Anthony Munoz Foundation really to try to engage the greater Cincinnati area to have an impact on young people physically, mentally, and spiritually. And we talked earlier about the importance of being a well-rounded person, a balanced person. And, even though we have some camps that deal with the physical, we deal with the mental. We recognize through scholarships for continuing education. We have leadership seminars. We have the spiritual where we'll have an overnight camp and not only teach them football, team building, but also add the spiritual component, which I believe is very important into an individual's life. And that's why we started it 7 years ago, is because, I wanted to use the platform that God has given me to bring in resources, to have programs, we work with one group in the inner city that has a mentoring program. Some 30 to 40 schools in this area are involved in that mentoring program. And just to see the testimonials of the young people that getting mentored all of a sudden, from being a, not good student to a very good student, the self-esteem, those are the things that we as role models, as community leaders, can implement into these young people and really have an effect. And that's what we're able to do through the foundation. And that's what excites me is that, we have over 100 corporate partners, and then we have a staff that has a passion for young people. And, you know, again, this is something that's not about me. It's about hopefully leaving a legacy where the things we're doing here can continue to have the impact on young people in this great community.
Working with these young people, Anthony Munoz, what have you learned from them?
Well, I learned quite a bit. I mean, I learned that, you know, times are, first of all, you know, just the things that they're going through these days compared to, you know, way back when I was growing up as a youngster, the pressures, the, you know, the distractions are much, much greater. So, you know, that's those are the things that I'm learning. You know, times at the home is much tougher at times. We talked a little bit about that earlier. But, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, you learn so much as an individual. A lot of times I'm gaining more than they're gaining because of the lessons they're teaching us as adults.
How can we learn more about your foundation?
Well, you can go to MunozFoundation.org, and we have a website there that it's actually we have a website and it's being updated, but you can learn about all the fundraising events. You can learn about our programs. You can learn about partners. And that's the best way to go. And then, of course, our phone number is 513-772-4900. And that pretty much gives you everything you need to know about our foundation.
You mentioned Merlin Olsen earlier. And a few months ago, we were together, and Merlin said that there's been two unbelievably special human beings in the last 25 years in the NFL. Anthony Munoz and Tony Dungy. Talk to us about Tony Dungy.
Well, you know, first of all, that, you know, that comment is just, it's unbelievable. I mean, I look at a guy like Merlin Olsen, and he's pretty special in my eyes. I mean, he's a guy that played the game that was supposed to be played and just a great person to be around. And then you look at a guy like Tony Dungy, and I've known Tony since the early 80s. And to me, he is one of those silent leaders. I mean, the guy that's not ranting and raving, screaming and yelling, but commands the respect, commands the work ethic, and he's a winner. I mean, and not only on the field, but more importantly, off the field. And, you know, you see what happened a couple years with his son, and you see the way he handled it. I'm sure that, I mean, agonizing. I'm sure, you know, it's every day is tough with losing a son. But just with the class and dignity and the faith that he handled it with, I mean, that's Tony Dungy, off the field, on the field. And since I've known him, that's been him. I mean, the guy, you know, has done a tremendous amount for the game with the NFL. And I think it's only beginning for him. I mean, he's a young man. I think he's going to do great things now that he's, you know, not coaching. And I have a tremendous amount of respect for Tony, and I've had some chances to sit and talk to him about coaching and his vision and his whole mission as a coach. And it's very, very impressive. But the guy is just he is the same back in the, you know, early 80s as he is now. You're going to see him always be solid, and I just really admire what Tony has done and what he's going to continue to do.
What makes a great dad, Anthony Munoz?
Well, I think a great dad, first and foremost, I think, is allowing your children to see how much you love your wife and are engaged with your wife, making her believe she is the most precious around, and through words and action. And how you treat her verbally, non-verbally, being there. I know a lot of times it means sacrificing things, but being there with your kids and engaging with your kids in a special way, not just the time you spend with them, but how you engage with them. So I think those things are very important, because I truly believe the way you treat your spouse is the way your children are going to treat their mother, and the way they're going to treat their future spouses or girlfriends or boyfriends. And I think that's, to me, to allow them to see that you're not perfect. There's been many a times where I've gone to my kids and I've had to apologize, and I've asked them to pray for me and, you know, forgive me for making the mistakes. So I think when they can see the transparency and the vulnerability, I think that also is part of it.
If there's a young athlete out listening tonight, and he hears about, you mentioned God and faith and humility, and he's thinking, that's the way I want to be, but I'm afraid to because of all the trash talk and I'll be mocked. What do you say to that young person?
Well, the first thing I would say is, you know, again, I'll quote a scripture. God says that we should not, we, he does not give us a spirit of timidity, but a spirit of power and self-control. And I guess that's, it started back for me as a young kid when my older brother said, Anthony, you don't have to talk about your game. If you're good enough, your game will talk, you know, will speak for itself. And to me, to get out on the field and let your talking do your, or your playing do your talking is the biggest, biggest message. I mean, there's nothing you can say verbally that will convince anybody about how good you are other than going out and just getting the job done with the greatest of intensity, the greatest of focus, the greatest of preparation. And that's the approach that I took, even with the spiritual side of my life being very, very important. That's what God wants us to do. He wants us to be the best. And especially in the game of football or any other, he gives us that gift, so now we have to develop it. And you go out there, like I said, we're not to be timid, but intense, strength, but at the same time, have, you know, have some humility. And I think with that combination, you can be the best at what you're doing.
Last question. What advice would you give to our young listeners as we leave tonight?
What I would say is that whatever you do, do it with all your heart. You know, if you're going to go, you know, and work on the computer, when you're on that computer and doing your homework, give it all you got. If you got practice, give it all you got. If you got a chore around the house, you know, do the best job on the lawn or in the house. And I think that's one thing that I would, you know, advise young people is just the work ethic. Do everything that you do and be the best. When you get ready for a test, get ready so you can do the best on the test. For a game, get ready through practice. You know, that's one of the things I tell young people constantly. You know, as a football player, there was one game a week, so you had four or five practices a day. So use those practices to get ready for that final examination. But and stay away from the temptations and those things that we're going to, you know, and you pretty much know that are going to affect you in a negative way.
Anthony Munoz, you're a better man than you were a Hall of Fame football player.
Jack, thank you very much. This is it's been an awful pleasant time with you here.
God bless. Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohol.